Entrepreneurs' relief can be claimed by sole traders and partners disposing of their businesses. Therefore, where a sole trader transfers his business to a limited company, any gains arising on the incorporation can be reduced by entrepreneurs' relief. The way the relief works was changed in the Second Finance Act of 2010 with effect from the 23rd of June 2010. For disposals prior to the 23rd of June 2010, entrepreneurs' relief worked by reducing qualifying gains by 4/9. The remaining 5/9 of the gain was then charged at 18%. This gave an effective tax rate of 10%. The relief was only available on the first £2 million of lifetime capital gains. This lifetime limit was £1 million for disposals made before the 6th of April 2010. Individuals could claim relief for gains on multiple occasions up to a cumulative total of £2 million. Gains in excess of the £2 million threshold were then charged at 18%. Entrepreneurs' relief was given after incorporation relief. Therefore, if full incorporation relief was given, there was no chargeable gain to be reduced by entrepreneurs' relief. For disposals from the 23rd of June 2010 onwards, the lifetime limit has been increased to £5 million. Individuals can now claim relief for gains on multiple occasions up to a cumulative total of £5 million. The way in which entrepreneurs' relief is applied has also changed. From the 23rd of June 2010 onwards, the rate of capital gains tax payable by an individual depends on their taxable income for the year. If an individual has taxable income below the basic rate limit, gains that fall in the basic rate band are taxed at 18%, and any gains above the basic rate limit are taxed at 28%. To maintain the effective rate of tax at 10% for all individuals who dispose of assets qualifying for entrepreneurs' relief, the relief is now given by taxing the qualifying gains at 10%. There is no 4/9 reduction. Therefore, the relief now applies when calculating the capital gains tax liability rather than reducing the chargeable gain. This change in method was made to ensure that an individual will always be taxed at an effective rate of 10% on gains qualifying for entrepreneurs' relief, regardless of when during 2010-11 the disposal was made. Returning to Jason. Jason Lee incorporates his sole trader business on the 31st of December 2010 in return for shares and loan stock. His capital gain on incorporation was £325,000. Incorporation relief defers £260,000 of this gain to leave a chargeable gain of £65,000. We will assume that Jason has made other disposals during 2010-11 which use up his annual exemption. The chargeable gain of £65,000 qualifies for entrepreneurs' relief and will therefore be taxed at 10% to give him a capital gains tax liability of £6,500 on incorporation. Remember, entrepreneurs' relief may also be available on a subsequent disposal of the shares, provided the individual has both owned at least 5% of the shares and worked for the company for at least 1 year prior to the sale of the shares. Even though incorporation relief is automatic, assuming the conditions have been satisfied, the taxpayer can elect under Section 162A TCGA 1992 to disapply incorporation relief if he doesn't want to have it. This will be a consideration for individuals who have not utilized full entrepreneurs' relief and who may not be eligible for entrepreneurs' relief on a future sale of their shares in the company. For example, if they no longer work for the company at the date they sell the shares. Returning once again to Jason. Jason Lee incorporates his sole trader business on the 31st of December 2010 by transferring assets to a new company, Lee Light Haulage Limited. His chargeable gains on incorporation are £325,000. Lee Light Haulage Limited offers Jason £400,000 in ordinary shares and £100,000 left outstanding on director's loan account. Jason elects under Section 162A TCGA 1992 to disapply incorporation relief. Again, he has made other disposals during 2010-11 which use up his annual exemption. The chargeable gain of £325,000 qualifies for entrepreneur's relief and will therefore be taxed at 10% to give him a capital gains tax liability of £32,500 on incorporation. The election has increased Jason's CGT by £26,000, being £32,500 less £6,500. However, the CGT base cost of his new shares has been uplifted. The base cost is now £400,000 instead of only £140,000 with incorporation relief. This will save CGT as and when his shares are sold. An election to disapply incorporation relief will therefore be a good idea when entrepreneur's relief will not be available on a future disposal of the shares. If an individual gives away a business asset, the donor and the donee can make a joint election to defer the gain under the gift relief provisions in Section 165 TCGA 1992. This applies in the same way if the donee is a company. Therefore, gift relief can be used as an alternative to incorporation relief where a sole trader transfers his business to a company. A sole trader may consider making gift relief claims if he does not wish to transfer all of his business assets to the company. One of the conditions for incorporation relief is that all of the individual's assets must be transferred to the company. Therefore, if the sole trader wishes to retain an asset, for example a building, outside the company, the only way to obtain capital gains tax deferral relief would be to claim gift relief instead. One reason why a taxpayer may not wish to transfer a building to a company is in order to save stamp duty land tax on the transfer. Following a gift relief claim, the deferred gain is rolled over and reduces the base cost of the asset in the hands of the company. It does not reduce the base cost of the taxpayer's shares. As with incorporation relief, entrepreneur's relief applies after gift relief. Therefore, if full gift relief is given, there is no chargeable gain left to benefit from entrepreneur's relief.
Back to Jason.
Jason incorporates his sole trader business on the 31st of December 2010 by transferring assets to a new company, Lee Light Haulage Limited.
Jason decides to retain ownership of the vehicle depot as it stands on potentially valuable development land near the local Tesco supermarket. There are rumours that Tesco want to expand their store and may wish to make Jason an offer for the land in a few years' time. He therefore transfers the remaining assets to the company and retains the vehicle depot. He will rent the depot out to Lee Light Haulage Limited at a commercial rent. This is another method of extracting cash from the company without paying NIC. The retention of the depot also reduces the stamp duty land tax liability. Jason's capital gains position is as follows. He has a gain on the transfer of the premises and on the transfer of the goodwill. Proceeds are deemed to be market value, so the gains, before reliefs, are £115,000 on the premises and £150,000 on the goodwill. Jason is not entitled to incorporation relief, as he has not transferred all of his business assets to the new company. However, the gains on the premises and the goodwill can be deferred using gift relief. Gift relief reduces the chargeable gains on the assets transferred, and as full gift relief is available, the chargeable gains are reduced to nil. So, what happens to the deferred gains? The deferred gains are rolled over and reduce the base cost of the assets in the hands of the company. The base cost of the premises will be the market value of £175,000 less the deferred gain of £115,000, giving £60,000. The base cost of the goodwill to the company is zero. Remember that the effect of a gift relief claim is to reduce the base cost of the assets in the hands of the new company. This means that Lee Light Haulage Limited will have a higher corporation tax liability as and when it sells its assets. The base cost of Jason's shares in Lee Light Haulage Limited will simply be the amount he actually paid for them when he set up the company. This could be as little as £1. Jason will therefore have a higher CGT liability when he comes to sell his shares. One of the key downsides of the gift relief route is the potential double charge to tax when the individual decides to make an exit from the business by winding up the company. The double charge will arise because the company will sell its assets, for example, goodwill, buildings, etc. As the assets have a low base cost, a potentially large capital gain will arise in the hands of the company, which will be charged to corporation tax in the final accounting period. The shareholder will wind up the company and extract the cash. The cash extracted will be sales proceeds for CGT. As the shares have a low base cost, there will also be a potentially high chargeable gain on the disposal of the shares.
The same value has therefore been charged to both corporation tax and CGT. The gain may be eligible for entrepreneur's relief. In the majority of instances, where a sole trader is transferring all of his assets to the company, it is beneficial for the sole trader to take incorporation relief as opposed to gift relief.
Moving on now to national insurance.
When a sole trader transfers his business to a company, he will be changing his status for national insurance purposes. Sole traders pay NIC under Class 2 and Class 4. Class 2 contributions are fixed at £2.40 per week for 2010-11 and are paid either monthly or quarterly.
Class 4 contributions are based on the taxable trading profits and are charged at 8% between the upper and lower profit limits and at 1% on profits in excess of the upper limit. Class 4 NICs are collected with income tax under the self-assessment system. Note that Class 4 NICs, like income tax, are charged on the taxable profits of the business for the tax year, irrespective of whether the trader draws the profits out of the business. The trader's actual drawings are irrelevant for tax and NIC purposes. The Class 2 and Class 4 regime will no longer apply once the sole tradership has ceased. Once the business is transferred to a limited company, the individual will be a director shareholder of the company. If the director shareholder wishes to extract money from the business for his own personal expenditure, he can essentially do so either by payment of a salary or employment-related bonus, or by the company declaring dividends to its shareholders out of its profits. If a salary or bonus is taken by the director, the payment must be made under deduction of tax and NIC under the PAYE system. NIC is payable by the employee under Class 1 at 11% between the earnings threshold and the upper earnings limit and at 1% thereafter.
In addition, employer's secondary Class 1 NIC at 12.8% must also be paid to HMRC whenever a salary or bonus payment is made. For this reason, it is often more expensive from an NIC perspective for an individual to receive salary from a company than to earn profits as a sole trader. We will illustrate this with some numbers. In 2010-11, Jason, a sole trader, has taxable trading profits of £90,000. His NIC liability for the year will be as follows. Class 2 contributions are £2.40 per week for 52 weeks, giving £125. His profit exceeds the Class 4 upper profit limit, so Jason will pay NICs at 8% up to the upper limit and and at 1% above the limit. Class 4 contributions are therefore £3,053 in the 8% band and £461 in the 1% band. His total national insurance contributions as a sole trader in 2010-11 will therefore be £3,639. Assume instead that Jason is a director of Lee Light Haulage Limited, and in 2010-11 he was paid a salary of £90,000. The NIC liability would be as follows. Jason will now pay Class 1 NICs instead of Classes 2 and 4. His salary exceeds the upper earnings limit, so Jason will pay NICs at 11% up to the upper earnings limit and at 1% above. Class 1 contributions are therefore £4,198 in the 11% band and £461 in the 1% band. His total national insurance contributions as a company director in 2010-11 will therefore be £4,659. In addition, the company will be liable to Class 1 secondary contributions on the salary paid to Jason. Employer's contributions are at 12.8% above the earnings threshold of £5,715. So the NICs payable by Jason's new company in 2010-11 are £10,788. As you can see, the NIC burden is significantly higher for a salary paid by a company, mainly because of the requirement for the company to pay Class 1 secondary NICs. Note also that as Jason is a director, we calculate his NICs on an annual basis, regardless of his actual payment periods. Liability to NICs can be avoided by Lee Light Haulage Limited paying Jason dividends out of the company profits, as opposed to paying a salary.